Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today on our Green Scene Report, hear why some residents and tribal members in rural areas of Campo, Boulevard, and Hakumba are raising objections to proposed new wind energy projects in their communities. Then on our local government report, we'll have the latest Lemon Grove City Council actions on housing, green grants, and the adoption of Lemon Ups as the official Lemon Grove cookie. In Casa de Oro, hear about a new survey showing support for a business improvement district. We'll also tell you where you can watch a debate coming up between candidates in the 50th Congressional District race to replace Duncan Hunter, who resigned after pleading guilty to a corruption charge. We'll also have news about some actions the county is taking to help those who need assistance to evacuate during wildfires. Now, if you're a senior in need of help to prepare your income tax returns, we'll have some good news for you today from AARP, which is providing tax assistance to seniors statewide. Our newsmaker interview today is with Poway Mayor Steve Voss. He's one of four candidates running to fill the second district seat being vacated by Diane Jacob due to term limits. Hear his views on housing, homelessness, transportation, wildfires, and other burning issues in East County on today's show. And then from Public News Service, we'll have a report on concerns raised by environmental groups over the Trump administration removing penalties for companies that inadvertently kill birds, even if it's due to negligence, such as from oil spills, as well as from power lines, wind turbines, and other perils at a time when bird populations have dropped sharply across the United States and locally. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
Residents of Campo, Boulevard, and Hakumba are voicing concerns over massive wind projects proposed on the Campo Reservation and in nearby Boulevard. At a January 23rd meeting in Boulevard, held by County Planning and Development Services, residents spoke out against turbines that would be 596 feet tall, much bigger than other wind turbines already in the area, which range from 325 feet to nearly 500 feet in height. 60 turbines are planned to crisscross the Campo Indian Reservation, and another 30 turbines for McCain Valley, near Interstate 8 in Boulevard. According to Donna Tisdale, chair of the Boulevard Community Planning Group, these may be the largest wind turbines ever erected on land, but setbacks from some homes would be much less than setbacks required at many other wind projects, even though the turbines are larger. Over 60 local residents came to the meeting in Boulevard, and many spoke of negative impacts that existing turbines have had on their quality of life. Wind turbines in the area have burst into flames, sparked brush fires, and thrown off blades. Stray voltage 1,000 times higher than normal has been measured in homes near the Kumeyaay Wind Project on the Campo Reservation. Neighbors have complained of noise that sounds like jet engines, flashing red lights, and shadow flicker, as well as headaches, trouble sleeping, and cancers they fear may have been caused by exposure to high voltage frequencies from turbines and power lines. Other concerns are impacts on wildlife and draining of groundwater supplies. Some residents had wells run dry after pumping to build SDG&E's Eco Substation. Yet the same water source is proposed for use during construction of Campo Wind. Campo tribal members who oppose the project say that they have presented a petition with 65 signatures to their tribal leader, asking the tribal council to overturn an earlier disputed vote to erect the giant turbines on the reservation. The tribe earlier voted 32-14 in favor of the project during a meeting that opponents say was announced as an informational-only session, so many were not present. Tribal leaders who support the project but don't live on the reservation, say the new turbines would bring revenues to the tribe while providing clean, renewable energy to the region. The nonprofit Backcountry Against Dumps opposes both TerraGen's Campo Wind Project and the Boulder Brush Project for a high-voltage substation and power lines to connect the new wind turbines to the Sunrise Power Link. The nonprofit is considering litigation if the projects are approved. Yet, a third project, Torrey Wind, is also proposed on private property, the Big Sky Ranch in Boulevard, where 30 giant turbines, each taller than the highest skyscraper downtown, are proposed. If projects are built over the objections of community members, some residents are calling on energy project developers to buy out their properties, stating that their property values have already declined. But Campo Indian members living on the reservation say they are prohibited from selling their homes. They fear that the place where their families have lived for generations will become unlivable, leaving them unable to afford to move elsewhere, also robbing their children of both their ancestral lands and their futures. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
The Casa de Oro Alliance has announced results of its community survey conducted late last year. Over 490 responses were received from residents and business owners who were contacted via mailers, emails, the organization's website, and social media. The survey covered the business district on Campbell Road between Kenwood Drive and Sweetwater Springs Boulevard. Over 85% of those surveyed said they visit the Casa de Oro often, 10% work there, and 6% own a business. Asked if they would support a business improvement district, 39% of the local business owners surveyed said they would strongly support one, and another 32% would somewhat support one. Bob Yaris, president of the Casa de Oro Alliance, says he is impressed that 71% of businesses there are interested in forming a business improvement district, such as those that have helped to revitalize areas such as Little Italy and North Park. Yaris says 25 members have agreed to be on the Casa de Oro Alliance Advisory Council, including many local business owners supportive of the idea. The group aims to support revitalization of Casa de Oro, including improving lighting and streetscaping, also considering asking the county for a moratorium on liquor store licenses while encouraging new businesses to relocate there that residents want to see to help their community thrive. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Jonathan Getz with a local government report from Lemon Grove. Lemon Grove leaders kicked off the new year in a well-attended meeting with many citizens clearly interested in the medical marijuana dispensary item on the agenda. Staff recommended denying a conditional use permit for a dispensary on Harris Street due to inadequate parking, but the council granted a continuance until February 18th. The council unanimously voted to direct staff to proceed with the $1.4 million grant request for state funding. If the city succeeds in getting the funds, the Green Infrastructure Grant Program money would be used to support Lemon Grove's Main Street project to improve the city's downtown district. Council also approved a staff recommendation to allow 6 townhomes to be built on Hilltop Drive. Citizens and elected officials alike enjoyed the appearance of local Girl Scouts who announced creation of a new Girl Scout cookie called Lemon Ups. Mayor Raquel Vasquez and council members presented the Entrepreneurial Scouts with a proclamation declaring Lemon Ups the official Girl Scout cookie of Lemon Grove for 2020.
This is Miriam Raftery with some updates in the race in the 50th Congressional District to replace Duncan Hunter, who retired after pleading guilty to a campaign finance crime. The Greater San Diego Association of Realtors will host a candidate debate on Friday, February 14th for both the 50th Congressional District and the San Diego mayoral race. The debates will take place from 1 to 4 p.m. at the DoubleTree Hilton Hotel and be moderated by Matt Hall, editorial director for the Union Tribune and president-elect of the National Board of the Society of Professional Journalists. Candidates confirmed for the forum in the congressional race are Democrat Amar Campanajar, as well as Republicans Daryl Issa, the former congressman, State Senator Brian Jones, and conservative talk show host Carl DeMaio, as well as independent Helen Horvath. The mayoral candidates coming include Assemblyman Todd Gloria, council members Barbara Bree and Scott Sherman, as well as Jeta Applebaum, Rich Reel, and Tasha Williamson.
Registration is required for the San Diego Realtors Candidate Forum. And again, that's February 14th at the DoubleTree Hilton Hotel in Mission Valley, starting at 1 p.m.
If you needed to evacuate for an emergency, could you just get in your car and go? For some, the answer may be no, because they lack transportation, need additional help with medical equipment, or gathering items in their home. Studies have shown that during a disaster, older adults or people with disabilities or access and functional needs have added challenges when faced with an evacuation. This information inspired the County Office of Emergency Services to come up with the Neighborhood Evacuation Team Program in partnership with the Community Emergency Response Teams, or CERT, throughout the region. The teams are made up of disaster-trained volunteers who can help in their neighborhoods. People who reach out for assistance will be teamed up with a CERT member who can guide them through the process of making a plan that suits their needs, including working out transportation needs with a caregiver, neighbor, or family member. The County CAL FIRE / County Fire Authority, CERT, and school project partners introduced the new program Wednesday at Kearney High School. Supervisor Greg Cox says, having faced several major wildfires and other emergencies, some San Diego County residents have told emergency officials of the difficulty and delays they had to overcome to evacuate. This free service that is being offered through the NET program will help people who need extra help to put together a plan tailored for their needs. He adds, once they have a plan in place, if asked to evacuate, it may take them 15 minutes to leave instead of 45 or 75 minutes, and that could save someone's life. Jeff Toney, Director for County Emergency Services, explains, this program fits into the national Neighbors Helping Neighbors approach that is crucial in a disaster, because we know that in a major disaster, first responders will be tied up managing the threat, and it could be up to 72 hours before they could send someone to assist. So, we are glad to be an impetus for this effort where neighbors check in with one another, particularly in rural areas, and especially if a neighbor may have additional needs. The pilot begins in late January, with information going out to communities in 21 unincorporated areas. People interested in requesting this help can visit readysandiego.org to be paired with a CERT member. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Jonathan Getz.
It's that dreaded time of year again, tax time. But the good news is that the AARP Foundation's annual tax aid program is now in full swing, ready to help people prepare right up until the April 15th deadline. Gary Jurovich with the AARP Foundation says highly trained volunteer tax preparers are standing by to help at senior centers, libraries, churches, and government offices up and down the state.
All of our new people have to go through extensive training, become certified to do the returns, and all of our returning counselors that come back year after year, they have to go through a refresher training every year. Everybody has to pass three different tests.
Last year, almost 200,000 Californians got free help on their returns. They collected more than $92 million in federal refunds and more than $13 million in earned income tax credits. Nationwide in 2019, those numbers totaled $1.6 billion in refunds and $200 million from the tax credit. Jurovich says one of the biggest misconceptions is that these services are only for people over 50 or members only.
Some people think that you have to be an AARP member, which is absolutely not true. It's certainly free. A lot of people come in and expect that there's going to be a fee. It's not. It's free. We prepare the return, both federal and state returns, and then we file the returns electronically.
To find out which documents to bring or to locate a tax aid site near you, go to aarp.org/taxhelp or call 888-AARP-NOW. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. And today my very special guest is Poway Mayor Steve Voss. He's one of four candidates running for the San Diego County Supervisor District 2 seat, soon to be vacated by Diane Jacob due to term limits. Steve has been the mayor of Poway since 2014, and before that, he served on the Poway City Council. He and his wife, who's a journalist, live in Poway, and they have four children. He's also the president of the San Diego Association of Governments, or SANDAG, a post he's held since late 2018. He owns a Poway production company. He's won several Emmy Awards, and he's also America's only Grammy Award-winning musician who's a mayor. Steve, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure. So tell me, what made you decide to jump from being mayor of Poway to running for county supervisor?
You know, being mayor of Poway and being East County supervisor, there's a lot in common. The supervisors are, particularly for the unincorporated areas, it's like being East County's mayor.
Well,
and
that's true.
So there's a great transference of abilities and track record that goes on. And we've got a heck of a story to tell from Poway, and I think it represents a great blueprint for East County.
Well, my next question was, what are your most significant accomplishments, and how has that experience prepared you to represent this diverse and geographically broad district?
Well, gosh, there are a lot of things. Number one, I'm a fiscal conservative, and that plays into everything we do in Poway. We are consistently the safest city in the county. We're ranked number one to raise a family. We've got the best roads in the county. We pay down our pension obligations. We protect private property rights. So those things alone, I think, are a great blueprint. And I take great pride in the fact that during this time when we're so challenged to provide more housing,
yeah. We've
been able to begin revitalization, really a reimagination of Poway Road, where it was really horribly underutilized. And we've got a couple hundred new homes coming along Poway Road. But the thing that I love to brag about is that the same time that we've approved those new homes, we've expanded our open space in the last year by over 342 acres with more to come. So we've found that magic yellow brick road down the middle of the need for housing, but also the critical challenge we have of protecting open space.
Yeah, that is a tough tightrope to walk there with all those competing issues. What are your top priorities if you're elected, Steve?
Public safety is always number one. We need to keep the backcountry safe from wildfire, and I'm proud to be endorsed by Cal Fire firefighters. We also need to make sure that our deputy sheriffs have the resources and tools they need to keep us safe. It's always our most sacred responsibility.
You've got a lot of law enforcement endorsements, too, I understand.
I'm endorsed by every law enforcement agency in the district, also by the deputy district attorneys, by the probation officers. I think they recognize what I've done in Poway, always standing shoulder to shoulder with law enforcement to make sure they have everything they need to keep us safe.
Very good. And then I know on your website you also listed infrastructure, open space, housing, and accessibility as some of your top issues as well.
You know, when I joined the city council back in 2012, it was then that I started publishing my cell phone number. And even when I became mayor, I insisted that the city put my cell phone number on the city website so people can call me 24/7, 365. And it's kind of funny because I'll get phone calls and I'll answer the phone.
I bet you do.
And there'll be a long pause on the other end. And then somebody will kind of timidly say, well, I didn't think I'd really reach you.
Well, you want to let our readers know what that number, our listeners know what that is.
They need to look on the website.
Okay. There you go.
No, it's very, very easy to find, and I'm happy to talk to people.
Super.
You know, primarily, I want to be there right now as mayor of Poway for my constituents. When I'm the county supervisor, I'm going to be there for those folks as well.
Well, very good. I think that's refreshing for people to hear. Supervisor Jacob, who has endorsed you also, has long championed creation of trails and open spaces, parks, preserves, and still supporting, you know, development that she would consider sensible in some areas. Do you plan to continue in that tradition, Steve?
Oh, absolutely. That's why I point to what we've accomplished in Poway. Poway as a city has more open space as a percentage of its landmass than any other jurisdiction in the county. I'm proud of that. You know, we'd love to go out and recreate in our open space. We have 57 miles of trails for equestrians, for bike riders, for hikers. And that, again, I keep pointing to the blueprint that that represents for the county. I think we need to aim for that type of open space and recreational opportunity.
That's great. Now, of course, there's also demand for more housing, especially affordable housing. How would you balance those concerns against those who are worried about sprawl development in rural areas or those in more urban areas who are worried about high-density housing, high-rises, you know, that sort of thing?
Yeah. Here again, I'll point to what we've done in Poway. We have two affordable housing projects in development right now. One, a 53-unit project for developmentally disabled adults. Another, a senior project with veteran preference.
Nice.
Those are appropriately placed near transit, near stores, and all those kind of things. And they're beautiful. They are going to be spectacular. Every one of the affordable housing projects we've done in Poway, if you drove by them, you wouldn't know that they're affordable or subsidized housing. We do them right and we take care of them.
Well, that's good to hear. In your interview with the Union Tribune, you mentioned that you oppose Measure A, which is the ballot measure that would let people vote on large housing projects if they require a waiver of the general plan. In other words, the backers of it apparently don't trust supervisors to do that. The aim being to limit sprawl development out in the rural areas. Can you explain your opposition to that?
I think it's really, really difficult. These, proposed projects, they are so nuanced, and there is so much detail and information to absorb. You really have to take the time to get familiar with it and know the ins and outs of a proposal. And typical voters aren't going to want to do that. They're going to see ads on TV that one side or the other or both can spend millions of dollars to sway the voters. I'm concerned about somebody, let's say, in San Ysidro voting on a project in Fallbrook or beyond. I just don't think that's the best way to go. And I think if that were to pass, it's going to make it even more difficult to meet the housing needs that are already there.
Good point. Now, what about a project like Newland Sierra? I think that's Measure B, but that's one where, from my reading of it, the three supervisors at the time voted to go something like 20 times more than the density allowed, and they did it over the objections of the planners in the community up there. While some waivers might be appropriate at times, do you see a limit as to just how far that should go? And how heavily would you weigh the views of the community planners or the people that live up in the area, as opposed to what somebody at the other end of the county may think?
Sure. I think what the community planners have to say is very, very important. That's why we have them out there. But ultimately, the supervisors have to make the decision. If we were simply going to every time rubber stamp what the community planner said, then there'd be no need for the supervisors. You know, the Newland Sierra project, it's interesting because there you have somebody with a whole lot of money from Golden Door raising a big stink about it. The thing that I think is lost in the conversation about Newland Sierra is it's already zoned for millions of square feet of commercial space. And so I think, okay, commercial space versus the desperate need for housing, I'm going to lean towards housing because the state is putting tremendous pressures on us.
You have also indicated that addressing homelessness is a top priority for you. And of course, among voters, we hear all the time, that seems to be one of the top concerns. What is your approach to resolving this complex issue? And within the framework of a new Supreme Court ruling that prohibits law enforcement from arresting homeless people for sleeping in public places if there aren't any shelter beds available.
Yeah, you're referring to the Martin versus Boise decision.
Exactly.
And it really was a paradigm shift for dealing with folks who are on the street.
Yes, it is.
A couple things. I believe that our residents have a right to clean and safe streets and neighborhoods and parks.
Sure.
We have a moral obligation, though, to provide for those that are less fortunate or going through tough times. I've shared with you before. This topic is personal for me. When I was a teenager, my sister was diagnosed as a severe schizophrenic. And back in those days, there wasn't much of a safety net. And once she turned 21, there certainly wasn't a safety net.
True.
And She lived a rough and tumble life on the streets at times. So I've seen it firsthand. I've seen the impacts. I love what Supervisor Jacob proposed just a few days ago at the County Board of Supervisors, some more shelters so we can move people off the streets.
Well, actually, it'll be the first shelter in the unincorporated part of the county. They've given vouchers for people to go to hotels or, you know, help out other places. But this really is kind of a milestone.
It is a milestone. And I appreciate what Nathan Fletcher has done in the proposal for a mental health hub on the south side of Mission Valley. I think we're taking critical steps in the right direction. I just want to see us continue and expand those opportunities because there are a lot of folks in desperate need of help.
Yeah, very true. Sandag has drawn controversy in recent years, much of it before your term, we should add, for prioritizing transit projects over highways improvements, and some would say kind of going back on some of the promises that were made to people out in East County when some of the big housing projects
were put in.
Yeah, they're going to expand.
Yeah, exactly. We spend all these years paying money, paying taxes, and then all of a sudden they say, well, we're not going to give you what we promised. That's wrong.
So tell us about the efforts you've made as the new Sandag chair in the last year to help assure that East County gets its fair share of funds. And also, tell us how you would balance those state mandates to reduce greenhouse gas emissions with the demand, you know, on the other hand, to reduce the gridlock on highways like 52 and 67 and 94 out here.
Well, let's talk about 67 first, because 67 isn't so much a case about gridlock. There are some improvements we can make, particularly down towards Lakeside.
Yeah, it's more evacuation, safe evacuation during fires.
Long ago, it was promised that 67 would be expanded to four lanes between Maple View and Lakeside up to Highland Valley or Dye Road in Ramona. That's critical, not for reducing gridlock, but in case of wildfire, which we know is going to come.
Oh, sure.
It's not a question of if, it's when. We've got to be able to get folks out.
Right.
At the same time, our first responders need to get in to render aid. So that is a critical project, one that I'm not going to be quiet about. I'm really proud of having built in the last year a coalition at Sandag number one last July to prioritize on paper, to have a board statement that said, we are going to prioritize the 67, the 52, the 94-125 interchange, and up in North County, the 78. We are making those a priority. Several months later, we put those words into action when I proposed a budget amendment that delivered $90 million to begin doing environmental and design work on those projects. And I'm darn proud of it, but I'm not done yet.
Very good. The other side of the coin, of course, is what are some things that can be done to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions? And can we do both? Can we improve freeways and still figure out a way?
It's always a question of balance. I'll go back to what I've said about how we're doing building. Mm-hmm. At the same time, we're expanding open space and Poway. Balance is the key. I think some of the new executive director's concepts for high-speed rail and transit have a lot of merit in the urban areas, but we can't forget the outlying areas, and East County is full of outlying area.
It sure is. Supervisor Jacob has a tradition of holding coffees in every community in her district and other types of community meetings. Steve, are you going to continue in that vein, including the rural towns out here that we were just talking about?
You bet. I've been to a lot of those coffees in the last 2 years. Just seeing how she does it and what kind of topics they cover. I love it. I've done that since I became mayor of Poway. I have a coffee pretty much once a month in one of the local restaurants. People can just drop in and ask questions that they want. And of course, the fact that my cell phone number is out there, they call me and ask questions too. But I look forward to continuing not only the coffees, but she was the one that pioneered the community revitalization meetings in the outlying areas. It's a tremendous thing to do and a way to stay connected with the community.
Very good. San Diego County has long ambulance response times in some rural areas, sometimes an hour or more even on the major highways like 94 or 67. Do you think our county needs to mandate faster response times, at least on the major highways and for residents that live in the heart of rural towns out there, not, you know, out in the valley or on the mountaintop by themselves? So if the state of Missouri can have an average response time of, I think it's 7 or 8 minutes statewide, why can't San Diego County do better at this?
Oh, I think the county can. I think it's a matter of prioritizing, and you have to put your money where your mouth is. If the show me state can have better response times than us, then we need to show them a thing or two.
I like that. Wildfires are big concerns for everybody in this district, as you've noted, of course. Do you have any specific ideas, Steve, for improving our firefighting resources and fire protection for everyone?
Huge improvements were made after the wildfires of 03 and 07. One of the most desperately needed improvements that finally came to fruition was improving communication. That's really key.
Yeah.
The county has really stepped up, though, in recent years with the equipment and with aerial firefighting capabilities. I think one area where there's still a need for improvement is defensible space. We need to make sure that folks are creating the defensible space around their homes and using building materials that are going to withstand embers from fires. I think it's attainable, though. We're doing a whole lot better, but that doesn't mean there's not room to still improve.
Yeah, very good point. The county, of course, has in recent years formed a county fire department that was under the leadership of Supervisor Jacob and eliminated the volunteer firefighting departments. In some cases, that worked pretty well. You had rural stations where they couldn't even get anybody to man them because they were so far out in the middle of nowhere and stations were closed a lot. In other areas, there have been some problems, notably in Julian, where we've heard a lot of concerns from people up there, a lot of different people, about fire and ambulance response times since the takeover that sometimes are too slow. Somebody lost a house recently, and the old fire chief had to just stand there and watch it burn. He said they were prohibited from going in and helping and took a long time, you know, for anyone to get there, and someone lost a house over it. Same with some medical things. Now, CAL FIRE sort of disputes that there are problems, but so far we haven't been able to get our hands on the response time records or station staffing records. We've asked for some of this. Hasn't been forthcoming. If you're elected, Steve, would you commit to insist on receiving and reviewing those records from the date of the takeover and look at it compared to before? And if it turns out that the response times are falling short or there are other issues like not having snow tires on ambulances or something, would you commit to taking action to help assure the safety of Julian area residents and, of course, all the visitors like us that love to go up there and enjoy the apple pie?
Well, as I said earlier, my top priority is always public safety. I'm disappointed to hear that you haven't been able to get those records. That should be a simple matter of a public records request.
It should.
So I'm disappointed to hear that hasn't been available. But absolutely, I want folks to be safe out there. And the only way we can know that we're providing, you know, the best service is by looking at those records and seeing where there's room for improvement. Folks in Julian or Boulevard, wherever they are, they have a right to feel safe and know that if they call 911, somebody's going to be there soon enough to be able to render aid.
Right. I mean, the nutshell of their concern is that CAL FIRE, they got a lot of, you know, brave, hardworking firefighters, but if there's a wildfire somewhere and that engine, CAL FIRE engine, heads down the hill to Ramona or somewhere to fight a brush fire, who's there to put out a house fire in Julian?
You know? Right. Well, that's always a challenge, though. When you have a fast-moving wildfire, fire departments have to make a tough choice of where do we feel like we can defend this. When we had the wildfires coming over the hill in 2007 towards Poway, we had residents out there with pickup trucks and garden hoses fighting those fires. So sometimes you have to make tough choices, but I want to make sure we're delivering optimum service.
Yeah. Speaking of fire, you've kind of been tested by fire, so to speak, in the last year over the Shabbat of Poway incident. But I wondered if you'd like to speak to that. Tell us, was that the biggest challenge you faced as mayor, and what did you learn from that experience?
No mayor ever expects to have to go through something like that. Yeah. I remember that morning well, getting a call from my city manager and from the captain of our sheriff's department. I was on my way for kind of a holiday with a family that was visiting, but I turned right around and went directly to the scene. Those were tough days. My community needed reassurance, and we came together. I kind of wrapped my arms around my community and led them through some pretty dark days.
Yeah.
And Poway came through it, I think, stronger and closer than they've ever been before. So I wouldn't wish it on anybody, but I think we made the best out of a horrific situation.
Yeah, I mean, a mass shooting is something that no community, you know, ever wants to go through, certainly. another issue was the water situation up there, where you had a reservoir contamination there. And I know you gave everybody out free water and bottles and did a lot to try to mitigate that. One of your opponents is a former water board member. He's been saying the city should have had a connection to Ramona approved as backup for emergencies. And, you know, now there's a rate hike. I wanted to see if you wanted to respond to some of the criticism, which some of which he raised on our show.
Well, you know, I generally don't like to talk about what opponents say, particularly because it's generally not accurate.
That's why we're asking.
Our water was not shut off. Sacramento, where my opponent spent many, many years as part of that bureaucracy up there, this problem was created by Sacramento. We had a little bit of cloudiness in our water. Our water tested just fine throughout the entire challenge, shall we call it. However, Sacramento, in typical overreach, decided we needed to go to a precautionary boil alert. That alert was unnecessary.
Well, they were waiting on state testing, is that correct?
Well, testing was going on the whole time, and it kept coming back bacteria-free. Yep. So that was really, really frustrating. I think it was Ronald Reagan that said years ago, the scariest words in the English language are, I'm from the government, and I'm here to help. Actually, the scarier words are, I'm from Sacramento, and I'm here to help. We had it under control. Mm-hmm. Our community came together, and it's interesting that he's pointing the finger because the water agency he used to work for has had a number of precautionary boil alerts. This is one in the entire 60-year history of our water system, so we're doing just fine.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that, Steve. Major sand mining projects are proposed in Lakeside's El Monte Valley, which is an equestrian area, much like Poway. You've got a lot of threatened wildlife also, and it also has valley fever spores up there. Another sand mine is proposed on the Sweetwater River at Cottonwood Golf Course, next to a federal wildlife preserve. How do you weigh the concerns of the residents over, you know, the negative impacts that a sand mine could have on their lifestyle and on the wildlife versus the demands for sand for roadways and other construction projects?
You know, I have not met with anyone from either of the projects.
Really?
No.
I'm amazed.
No. And I have to be very careful because it's likely that those could come before me as a supervisor.
Correct. I know you can't comment.
So I can't
sure
say
I would vote
yes or no, but allow me to say that based on the little I know, I have great concerns. I'm an equestrian. I love to go horseback riding. I love to be out in open space. So I have real concerns.
Yeah, but I know. I have someone who happens to be one of my friends, but bought a place out there in Lakeside in El Monte Valley. Nobody told her about this, and she found out about a week after she bought, and she runs a facility for disabled children on horseback, you know, therapy program for kids on horseback, and she can't even imagine how she can do that if there's a sand mine across the street, literally, from her property.
Yeah, I will listen with an open mind, but I have concerns. That's probably the best way I can put it.
Sure, okay, thank you. Another area where we hear a lot of concerns from residents in East County is out in the Campo, Hakumba, Boulevard corridor, where there's been an onslaught of industrial-scale energy projects, well-meaning, we need the green energy, certainly, in general. But we've seen wind turbines going up that are as tall as the biggest skyscrapers downtown, and some of them actually have already exploded, caused brush fires, thrown off multi-ton blades. We've had people with red lights flashing, you know, in their windows all night long. Some residents have complained of sleep disruption, headaches, and even other health issues, as well as very big drops in their property values. So my questions to you is two-part. Do you think we can meet green mandates without projects that put the health or safety of people at risk? And secondly, if it's deemed that a project really does have to go in and there are negative impacts to that degree, should it be treated like a highway project where you give the person the option to be bought out or be paid for their decreased property value?
Well, as you and I were talking before we started recording, I'm intrigued and have great faith in the tinkerers of America. You know, if you think that, you know, Apple Computer started in a garage, Google started in a garage, Hewlett Packard started in a garage. I have no doubt that there are tinkerers out there now coming up with better options for clean energy. You know, I'm troubled by wind turbines. One of the concerns, it's invisible but terribly disruptive, are the low frequency rumbling that comes from this that can be heard from miles away. That certainly is going to disrupt the quiet enjoyment of someone's property. So I really have concerns about that. I'm more optimistic about solar because we're able to reduce the size of solar panels to where they might not be so visible. But yeah, to follow on what you said about when you're looking at something like a highway project and allow somebody to be bought out, I think everything has to be on the table because folks that live out there have a right to enjoy where they live.
Thank you for that. There was actually a health study that was begun at one of the universities here on the Manzanita Indian tribal members who were having a high cancer cluster and sleeplessness and some of these other issues. And then they ran out of funding to finish it, but they did have a preliminary conclusion that they believed it could be linked to these wind turbines out there. The people in the area were asking the county to fund a health study on the impacts of wind turbines on the local population out here before any more of them got put in, and that did not get approved. But is that something that you think maybe ought to be done?
Certainly worth looking at. I can't imagine with all these wind turbines, though, that are popping up around the country that no definitive study has been done about health impacts. I would want to dig in deeper to make sure we're not spending money that's already been spent by somebody else.
That makes a lot of sense. Health and Human Services constitutes a big part of the county budget. One of your other opponents comes out of that background herself and has said that's going to be her priority. I wanted to ask what your priorities would be within Health and Human Services. We've talked a little bit about it with mental health already, but...
Mental health would be number one.
Okay.
Absolutely number one. There's so much more that we can do, and because mental health and homelessness are inextricably linked together, I think mental health should be really a top priority within Health and Human Services.
Okay. What steps would you take to reduce crime and improve response times for sheriff deputies out in some of the, again, those rural areas where they'll call the Border Patrol first because they'll get there faster than the sheriff will in the middle of the night? And also, on crime, do you have ideas for reducing the high number of deaths that we're seeing in the county jails right now?
Okay, so those are two very different questions.
They are.
So
both
let
under
me take
crime.
Question one first. Yeah. We've been successful in reducing crime in Poway, and again, consistently the safest city in the county because of three things, I think. We make sure that we have the staff that we need. Mm-hmm. It's expensive, but it deserves to be paid for because it's our most sacred responsibility. Making sure that staff has the tools that they need. You can't have a bunch of people if they don't have the tools. Otherwise, it doesn't work well. And the third thing is making sure that we have adequate coverage all around the county to make sure folks out in the backcountry aren't waiting forever and ever. Now, there's a trade-off because some people move out there to be away from everything. You can't have a sheriff's deputy sitting on every corner.
Right.
But as long as we listen to what they're suggesting and listen to them tell us what other tools would help them be more effective, I think we'll get there. I'm delighted to be endorsed by the Deputy Sheriff's Association and also by Sheriff Bill Gore. That's because they know I take public safety and crime fighting seriously.
Very good. And what about the second question about the death rate in the county jails, which is a lot higher than, you know, pretty much anywhere else in California?
I got to rambling about the answer question.
That's
I apologize.
Okay. I know Sheriff Gore has done some studies and is looking into it, but I wondered if you had any ideas on that.
There are some things that need to be addressed right away. I understand from a previous study that there are some simple things like increasing the height of the railings on the higher levels of the jail.
Yeah.
We need to make sure that gets done. And to me, it's inexplicable why we haven't addressed that yet, because there have been some suicides over those railings. We have to remember a fair number of folks that come into the jail system have ingested drugs, sometimes ingesting drugs that were intended for sale, and they'll swallow a baggie.
Yeah, hiding the evidence.
Right. There's an X-ray machine apparently at the jail that's been inoperable for some time now.
So just fixing it.
Fix it, right. We've got a study that's going on right now. The former head of Rikers Island in New York is doing a study. My relationship with Bill Gore is such that when we get the results of that study, if it's during my tenure, I have no problem sitting down with Sheriff Gore and talking about what we need to do, how we need to prioritize that. I was the chair of the Public Safety Committee for San Diego Association of Governments for a few years, and so know Sheriff Gore quite well and other law enforcement folks, and I have a good relationship and don't have a problem sitting down and having a conversation.
That's great. Several people have asked us to ask you your views on short-term rentals such as Airbnbs. Should the county regulate these, and how do you balance the rights of property owners to make a little side income there versus neighbors being subjected to party houses?
Yeah, it's a challenge because I am a strong proponent of private property rights. But your rights as a property owner should not infringe on my rights as a property owner. You move into a neighborhood, it's a residential neighborhood, you don't want a commercial operation going next door. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't want a restaurant opening up next door, no matter how good a cook your neighbor might be. I think we can balance it. I think if there were some licensing required that had some teeth in the requirements, I think we could make it work. And if not, then we have to look at, all right, we cannot ruin one entire neighborhood because of one bad actor. So what are we going to do?
Yeah, good point.
But licensing should do the job.
Okay. Diane Jacob, again, has helped bring libraries to many rural communities. That's part of her legacy. We've had people ask us, out of two of the cities in the district, Santee and La Mesa, about if the county can do anything to help them replace the small libraries that are not really adequate for their residents' needs, and their cities just haven't been able to come up with the money to do it. It's been promised for years and years, never seems to happen. Now that so many of the rural towns have their libraries, could a little bit more be allocated maybe to help folks there? I guess the county does a little bit if it's in a city, but not as much.
You know, I'm a big fan of libraries. When I was a kid, Warner Library was the library in the town where I was. And I loved going there and going through the books. And I think it was also because I thought the librarian was cute when I was, you know, 13 years of age. So that drew me in. You know, in Poway, we put up our own money to build our library. Just like right now, we're breaking ground for a new intergenerational community center.
That's great.
And we're paying cash, between $10 and $11 million in cash to build that community center.
Saved your pennies up and did it right.
That's that conservative fiscal approach that I'm talking about. So while I'm sensitive to those other communities' needs for library, I think some of it rests on their shoulders to get the majority of the funds. I've seen Supervisor Jacob sit in her, I think it's called her, Sports, Fields, and Parks Committee, where folks come together and they'll sit there and say, okay, Supervisor, we have $250,000 for our new park. We're hoping you would match it. And in most cases, she does. I think there's an opportunity somewhere there, but those communities that are incorporated cities need to step up with some of their own green.
Yeah, that makes sense. You have been the organizer of the Carols by Candlelight concert that raises a lot of money every year for Children's Hospital. I wondered if you'd like to tell us a little bit about that.
Carols by Candlelight has been a labor of love of mine for 30 years. When I was a youngster, my little sister was born with some challenges, and we knew that she would not see her first birthday.
Oh, no.
She spent her one and only Christmas on Earth in a children's hospital, and it profoundly affected me, the love that she got, and planted the seed to want to pay it back. So I started this 30 years ago, along with Wayne Nelson from Little River Band, very famous band that your older listeners might remember. And it's just gone on and on and on. We've raised over $1 million for Brady Children's Hospital and some other children's charities.
Good for you. They saved my daughter's life when she was little and she had a heart condition, and it was the only place you could get the special, brand new surgery for it.
They've been there for so many people. You know, they have really blessed this community. They never turn somebody away who can't afford the treatment.
And I know you've sent me all the pictures of the checks and confirmed, you know, the charity got all the money that was promised. One of your opponents, again, has been sending things around, pointing out that the money for it, the ticket sales money, goes to your production company. And you've indicated, when I talked to you about this before, that you're not profiting off of it. Your company's not making a profit off of it, but just curious, are there set Form 700s or some kind of documentation that you can bring forward to be transparent for those who are asking?
It is despicable that my opponent is trying to make something of an event that has done so much good in the community. We do all of the required reporting. I have never made a dime off this show. Actually, I've probably spent more money on the show that's never been reimbursed. So it shows just how desperate and disgraced that individual is that's trying to make something out of it. No good deed goes unpunished comes to mind.
Okay. As a musician, you've won all kinds of awards, I understand. Can you tell us a little bit about your music on the personal side here, what kind of music you play? And
I spent pretty much my entire adult life making music. I started playing guitar when I was 6 years old, sitting on a fence post in Oregon where our family ranch was, and always wanted to be in the music industry. I'll never forget the first time I auditioned somewhere, and the guy called me the next day and he said, "Well, Steve, are you thinking of doing this as a hobby or a career?" And I said, "Well, I want to do it as a career." And he said, "Well, I'd suggest you think of it as a hobby." But some years later, I had been nominated for 4 Grammys. I won 1 Grammy 10 years ago last week.
Wow.
And won a bunch of Emmy Awards.
That's great.
I have done music for kids, music for TV shows and movies and things like that. And I've been
country
blessed.
Country music? Or?
Yeah, largely country, but I also produced, if you remember the band The Commodores.
Yeah.
I produced their R&B record.
I didn't know that. Very cool.
Little known fact.
So maybe if you're elected supervisor, we'll be seeing concerts to raise revenues for our region.
I don't think so.
Just kidding. But I'm curious, though, with all the different funding demands, you know, it's easy to talk about we should spend money on this and this, but you're a fiscal conservative. We can't do it all. Do you have any ideas, Steve, for either increasing revenues, creating new revenue sources for the county, or cutting expenses in any of the areas to fund some of the things that should be prioritized in your view?
Well, with the size of budget we have, there are certainly places we can cut. But I think it's always important to look towards growing the pie. That's what we're doing in Poway right now with bringing in new housing. That's going to increase our property tax revenues. And, you know, in any jurisdiction, property tax revenues and sales tax revenues are really your biggest source of funding. So if we do that right and wisely, I think we will have sufficient funds to do the things that need to be done.
There you go. Now, Steve, you've got a great sense of humor, and listeners, a lot of you may not know, but Steve has an annual tradition of doing an April Fool's Day joke every year as mayor. I thought you might enjoy sharing one of those with our with our listeners.
Well, probably the two most notorious April Fool's jokes I've done, there was one where I said that Potato Chip Rock, the famed hiking destination in Poway, had snapped off, but we were repairing it that same day and hoisted it back into place and glued it back together.
Funny.
And then just last year, I surpassed that when I said that we were opening a zip line over Lake Poway and it was open for free test rides. We had so many people show up at Lake Poway that we had to post signs saying that it was an April Fool's joke. It got worldwide media attention. It was pretty funny. Oh, I don't know how I'll ever top that.
That's funny. Maybe we can coax you to write one for us. We have a tradition every year of some April Fool's Day stories.
We've done pretty well without my help.
We solved that Highway 67 problem by putting up a double-decker highway to Julian where you could order apple pies when you pulled into the toll booth at the beginning. So, yeah, a lot of people believed it.
No, April Fool's Day is an awful lot of fun.
Okay. Where can listeners get more information about you and your campaign?
They can go to vosforsupervisor.com. That's spelled V-A-U-S for F-O-R, supervisor.com. Would love to have them visit. If they want more information, they can email me through the site there. If they want to volunteer, they can do that. If they want to get a sign, if they want to donate, that's the place to go.
That sounds super. What else would you like our listeners to know about you and your candidacy and your, you know, what you want to do if you get elected, Steve?
From the time I first ran for office, I take very seriously that we're elected to be public servants, and I believe the focus should be on the servant part. That's what I've always strived for. There are a lot of elected folks out there that love the focus on the public part. I've had that in my life already. I've been in the limelight. I don't need it anymore. I want to spend the rest of my days in office as supervisor being a servant.
Very good. Listeners, if you just tuned in, we have been speaking with Steve Voss, the Poway mayor and a candidate running for the 2nd Supervisorial District in San Diego. And you can tune into our upcoming shows to hear from other candidates in this race. And check our website at eastcountymagazine.org for full coverage of this very important election. Steve, I want to thank you for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ.
Thank you.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
The East County Magazine show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
Conservation groups are speaking out against a move Thursday by the Trump administration to remove penalties for companies whose business activities incidentally kill birds. The U.S. Interior Department is finalizing a change to the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, or MBTA, first announced 2 years ago. It removes penalties for bird deaths considered incidental take, even in cases of such gross negligence as a massive oil spill. Bob Dreher with Defenders of Wildlife says this will lead to many more bird deaths.
We already have evidence that businesses and federal agencies have turned their backs on conservation of birds because of the administration's policy. This may accelerate that. You may see more and more businesses saying, birds will be killed, but that's okay, go ahead.
In the past, the Migratory Bird Treaty Act gave companies incentives to prevent bird deaths with proactive measures, whether it's placing nets over oil pits or making power lines and wind turbines more visible to birds. The administration says the changes would ease onerous restrictions on commercial activity and infrastructure projects. California Congressman Alan Lowenthal has co-sponsored a bill to restore the MBTA to its pre-Trump interpretation, and it would create a system of permits and mitigation measures for incidental bird deaths.
We must make sure that the Fish and Wildlife Service knows that it has the authority to punish bad actors when they kill birds due to negligence. Right now, the administration and the Department of Interior are ignoring its responsibilities.
In September, Science magazine reported that 3 billion birds have vanished from North America since 1970. That's 30% of the bird population. The researchers blame incidental take from industry for one-third of those deaths. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
The East County Magazine show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
You're listening to the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats. Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.